The reality for many of you is that investment properties where you live have become absolutely unaffordable. The good news is that there are many cities with affordable properties and many of those under 100K. If you're someone who's ready to buy your first out-of-state property in the next 4 months, then I encourage you to check out my free training that'll break down the process and show you exactly what it takes to invest out of state. I purchased properties out of state and it's changed my life. The same is possible for you. You simply need the right information. My free training will help you take that next step towards buying your first out-of-state property. You can watch the training right now at outofstatemoney.com, or you can click the link in the description of this episode. Again, you can find it at outofstatemoney.com, or you can click the link in the description of this episode.
Excuse me, may I talk to you for a second?
Yes. This is the Black Real Estate Dialogue, and the purpose of the Black Real Estate Dialogue is to document the journey of an up-and-coming real estate investor and to share the stories of successful Black real estate investors.
I think a couple things you mentioned, I think it's important for people to understand, like whether it's an investment property, whether it's a personal residence that you want to do whatever with or just live in, it's important to know your location. Mm-hmm. Like you need to understand the neighborhoods, you need to understand the blocks and all those things, because that could have residual impact. Mm-hmm. Right, I'm sure your quality of life has been much better because everybody on your block, they go to work, you know, there's certain stuff a couple blocks over you probably don't have to deal with. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? Which is great for your, like, your quality of life, your peace of mind. Mm-hmm. But people need to know the locations, like, absolutely, where they're purchasing. You can't just blindly purchase because, mm-hmm, of the price or what have, right, you. And I think the other thing is you went where you wouldn't have a lot of competition.
Right.
I'm sure even back then, if you were in a quote unquote more desirable area, that it would have been harder for you to, absolutely, get in there, you know, get something at a good price, put money into it and things of that nature. So I think it's important for people to look at that and consider that, because, you know, you're starting, right? Mm-hmm. You got to start somewhere. Obviously, you need to have some level of comfort, but, right, you got to start somewhere. And I like your mentality because you said, let me just find somewhere to live and I'll figure it out. And that's what you did.
Absolutely. And also, I'm coming from a, you know, single income. Mm-hmm. So I realized that I cannot compete with a family, right? A two income household. They can outbid me. So I did bid on two other houses and I got outbid, and I'm actually glad I did, because I would not be able to do what I'm doing,
yeah,
on those properties the way that I'm doing it here. So I kind of, this was like the perfect scenario for me. I didn't even know that this was the perfect scenario. I just knew that don't nobody want this house. Yeah. I'll get it. It's just me. And it was in horrible condition.
Yeah.
Which is, it's actually, very difficult for things to match up where the construction costs, in addition to the appraised cost, where everything matches up, where FHA will approve it, right? Very difficult. It worked out perfectly. And then I got this additional space. But just knowing, I can't say that I knew the market.
Yeah.
I'll just say that I knew the neighborhoods. Even people that were from Oakland was like, man, you on 85th? I'm just like, yeah, this is 85th. It ain't, you know, it's not the Village, right? There's certain, you know, prominent neighborhoods, yeah, in Oakland that have that reputation that has been earned, right? Some people wear it, you know, prideful, like, you know, I'm not from LA, but I hear rappers talk about, you know, the Gardens, you know, neighborhoods and that have earned these reputations. But specifically where I am, it doesn't look quote unquote pretty. Mm-hmm. But there's a lot of culture and you know, when we talk about the fact that people from all over the world are coming to my property, spending top dollar to stay there, despite the rooster that my neighbor has. I don't even know who got that rooster.
Why do they have a rooster?
Well, you know what? My neighborhood is a predominantly Latino neighborhood.
Got it. Okay.
It was previously predominantly Black, but it's transitioned. And I mean, I've seen one time somebody was coming down the street on a bull. I got the video. I pulled over my car and I whipped out my phone because nobody would believe me.
Oh my
riding
gosh.
A bull down the street. So we do have people that are that come from places where they had a farm, yeah, and, you know, chickens and roosters, and, you know, it's just some of their cultures. But yeah, there's a rooster. It doesn't bother me, but some people would be, you know, devastated.
Yeah.
There's a Harley Davidson, like two Harley Davidson clubs, one two blocks away, another one down the street from me. So you're gonna hear loud Harleys throughout the day. We're on a major corridor, so it's a busy street. So it's a bus line.
Yeah.
Right. So it's a noisy street. And there's some illegal dumping that happens frequently in the neighborhood. And there's a lot of blighted properties in the neighborhood, but it's not, when you look at the crime map, there's literally no crime on my street. Like Oakland has a map where they pinpoint, you know, calls for service. You look at my block, there's nothing. I'm across the street from an elementary school as well. And then there's also, that's also across the street from what some would consider a mega church. They own like the whole block.
Yeah.
So politicians will go there.
Right, right, right.
Presidential candidates will go to that church.
Yeah.
So they can come get these votes, you know? So it's not unsafe at all. And I just knew that people would know that. So there was no competition.
Definitely.
No competition.
Definitely. Love it, man. So thanks for that background. So let's jump back to the tiny home. So the first one was purchased for how much again?
$33,000.
And then you used HELOC for it.
HELOC.
Can you, really quick, for those who may not know what a HELOC is, can you explain like what it is?
Yeah. HELOC is a home equity line of credit where the bank looks at how much your home is worth and how much you owe. And if there's some equity in there versus, you know, just pulling out the cash, you can pull out a line of credit based on your equity, and it's available for you to use. It's cash available for you to use. You may not even use it, but a lot of homes have equity, but you can't like use it unless you sell or refinance. So that equity line of credit is just a way to use the money, and it's in an account, and usually there's like a date where like 5 years after, where they'll cut off the line of credit, and then you just pay back on the principal and the interest. But it's just if you think of a credit card, right? That's just based on unsecured credit card, just trusting that you're going to pay it back.
Yeah.
But this equity line of credit is based on money that's in your home that you can use, and you just pay it back over time. If you use it or if you don't use it, it's a good vehicle for using the money, your money in your home that you own. It's dope, right? Yeah. Home equity line of credit.
Makes sense. And how much did you have to put into like getting the property up to standard, or was it kind of pretty much ready to go when you got it?
When
you bought the
tiny home? I think I want to say 98,000 was the
tiny home.
Oh, the tiny house.
Yeah, yeah.
How much did I have to put in my property to get it ready for the tiny house, or
how much you had to put into the tiny house?
Oh, how much did I have to put into the tiny house? When I bought the tiny house, there was a woman and her husband living in it, mm-hmm. and they divorced, she moved, so it came fully furnished.
Oh.
She said you can have everything. There was even a deck. They're like, "You want the deck too?" Right? I didn't take the deck. And they wanted to get rid of all of it. So it was fully furnished. And I added, to bring it to market, I added a Keurig, built a little coffee station. I added a couch. I put a TV in the loft area, a TV downstairs. Towels from Costco. Some plates. I can't give you a number, but I would say it was definitely like less than $4,000. Yeah. I did have to buy a new tankless water heater because the water heater that she had on there was rated for natural gas, and she was using propane. And so when I would run the water, it would like go hot and then it would go lukewarm.
Yeah.
And I didn't know why it was doing that. So I tried to DIY my way and figure out the problem until I finally broke down and had a plumber come out, and he opened it up. He said, "You see this? This means natural gas. You're using propane." And I'm like, I wish he would have told me that, because the tiny house sat for months because I couldn't figure this out and I didn't want to hire somebody. So I actually lost. I don't want to say I lost. But I could have went live much sooner had I known that I had to replace the hot water heater. And because I didn't want to tie into my natural gas and have like a gas line running, would have been a tripping hazard. I don't want to mess around with the public utilities like that. I just bought a new tankless water heater. I think it was like $500 back then, installed it myself. And after that, then I had to run an electrical line. Tiny house power is just like an RV power.
Yeah.
You just, you know, if you've ever been to like an RV camp, they have 30 amp or 50 amp power. This was a 30 amp. So that was like 2000, like 2500 for the outlet to be installed by an electrician, something that I wouldn't pay for now. I can do it myself now.
Yeah.
So I would say maybe we'll say about 7,000.
Yeah.
Right. With the water heater and the electrical outlet. And the supplies, no more than 7,000 to bring it to market. And I would even say, and that's on the high end.
Yeah.
That's on the high end because it was already pretty much furnished.
Yeah.
I would say, you know, I think 7 is a stretch. But if we just throw that number out there, just know that it's not that expensive to bring it to market. It was fully furnished.
Right. So is it? I heard you say upstairs. So it was like, it's like a loft area.
Yeah. So there's a sleeping loft area
with
a low ceiling. So you'd have to, you know, when you can't stand up there.
Yeah.
But I have a chair so you can sit and chill, watch TV, lay in a bed, watch TV. So, total square footage, including the loft is, 298 square feet, 300 square feet. The loft is you can chill up there.
Yeah.
And there's the bed, and then in front of the bed, I got a record player and a chair, and
like,
you can chill up there.
That's dope, man.
Thank you for listening to another episode of the Black Real Estate Dialogue Podcast. Remember to follow us on Instagram at Black Real Estate Dialogue, and be sure to leave us 5 stars and a review on your favorite podcast listening platform. Until next time.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at cenovus.com. Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at cenovus.com.